Hey there, foreigners. This is Rohit from BreakingTheBorders.com, home of the ambitious immigrants. Our today's guest, I don't think I should be interviewing him. I think I should be downloading his app and using it right away because he has built a company around yoga workouts, which I'm very passionate about also. I'm very curious to learn from Ramesh how he did it. Ramesh, welcome to Breaking the Borders podcast.
Hey guys, how are you?
Thanks for joining us today.
Awesome. Yeah, it's amazing to join you and looking forward to the discussion.
Yeah, good. So tell us a little bit about how you ended up in the US and when did you come and what was the first few years for you like?
Yeah, so I started off my career in India. So I started working for a small company called TCS. And then, TCS was just not my cup of tea. So I was there exactly for 1 month. And then I quit. And then I joined a startup in Noida, Delhi. Mm-hmm. And when I got out of school, which was around 94, EDA was very hot, electronic design automation. So I joined an EDA startup. I was the sixth employee there called Dellsoft. And so Dellsoft got acquired by a company called Mentor Graphics in the US. And that's how I ended up being here.
So wait a minute. So you went to this startup in 1994 when startups aren't that sexy yet, right?
They weren't sexy at all. Actually, my mom thought I was crazy. Everyone I talked to said I was crazy to join a startup. And but, you know, I just took the risk. And I had a couple of good mentors from college. And it just so happened that this startup was also a bunch of IIT guys. So it was risky to think about it now. But I think it was kind of a sure bet. Now that I think about it in retrospect.
Yeah. But you didn't know it at that time. So you started the startup and you got a lot of discouragement from people around you. How did you handle it?
It was tough. But, you know, I was very young at the time. So young and foolish or brave and foolish, whichever way you want to look at it. But it was, I guess I was very young. And, you know, when you are in the early 20s, I feel like that's when you can, you know, take that risk, do something different. Especially, you know, if you don't have family, you don't have kids, you don't have a mortgage, you know, so, and you don't have a car, especially, so, you know, you just have a bike or whatever in India, right? So, so it's much easier to make the decision. And from what I hear now in India, a lot of the youngsters are taking that step. So, it's great to hear that.
Absolutely. So being a startup founder is like being a rock star now in Bangalore.
Yeah, it was not when I came out of school, especially in Delhi. Yeah.
I see. Okay. Even in Delhi. So what was the worst part about it? Like, was there any struggles that you had to go through because it was a small company?
No, actually, it was at least for my personality, it was actually better fitting. Okay. TCS was horrible for me. So I know, like, I mean, TCS works out great for a lot of people. I have friends, I have classmates who have joined TCS or Wipro or Infosys right after school. And they've been there since then. And, you know, they have raised up in the ranks and they're doing really well. But it was just not my cup of tea.
Got it.
You know?
Got it.
So for me, TCS was a bigger struggle than the startup. The startup was very, very exciting. You know, like we were setting up at that time, you know, even internet was pretty primitive in India. Uh-huh. So we were setting up, like we were pulling lines for T1 connections. We set up the LAN and it was pretty exciting. Like every day it was like a new challenge.
Nice. Go ahead.
No, I think when the coming to the US was much higher. So a lot of my classmates came to the US either for masters or jobs and stuff like that. So that was kind of a struggle to sort of, you know, seeing everyone leave for the US or going for their MBAs. I actually got admissions to one of the bigger management schools in India and I didn't go for it. So, and
So you decided to come here and continue your startup adventure in the US. So which company was that?
So it was part of Mentor Graphics when I came. Okay. And then I joined another company called Chronologic Simulation, which got acquired by ViewLogic, which got acquired by Synopsys. So I was at Synopsys through the acquisitions, I got to Synopsys. And then I stayed at Synopsys for about 8 years, mainly because, again, you know, I'm an immigrant, so I'm mainly waiting out the green card.
Okay, period. I see. Yeah. So Synopsys was a big company, which was probably not your cup of tea, but you had to stay because of the visa concerns, is what you're saying.
That's right. Yeah. Okay. So, you know, like, and also imagine, and in the meantime, I also did my master's. I went to Stanford, did my computer science.
I see.
When I finished master's, which was part paid by Synopsys, and, you know, thanks to them for that. But when I finished master's, it was 98, 99, you know.
Okay.
And that was the boom time for the internet. 1.0 boom that was happening here in the Bay Area.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, I had offers from, at that time, you know, relatively unknown companies, but now very well-known companies. Like, I had offers from NetApp. I had offer from Jungly, which, you know, went on to become pretty big. But I couldn't join any of these companies because I was concerned about my green card. I was already pretty deep into the green card process at Synopsys.
Okay.
So I basically had to wait out the initial internet boom because, you know, I just didn't have a green card.
Yeah, so, on retrospect, maybe it's also better because there was a crash in there somewhere, right?
But, you know, it also, well, I mean, I think the flip side is if I had done that at the time, then I would have moved into internet much earlier.
Mm-hmm.
So I was in EDA for a little too long, in my opinion.
Got it.
So if I stayed a little longer, it would have been, if I jumped ship and gone to internet, who knows, you know, I might have been like Facebook or Google now. So,
so the struggle that you went through in 98 to 2000, right? So whether you should continue to get your green card or whether to join a startup by taking the risk is something that I hear over and over from people listening.
Yeah. Right?
So what would you recommend? What would you have done if you knew what you knew now at that time?
I think it's gotten worse from what you hear now, right?
Yeah.
It's much worse.
Yeah.
I think at least H1 portability has become much easier now.
Mm-hmm.
Like, you know, if you have an offer from some other company, you can port your H1 much better. I would say go for it. You know, like if you have a good, better offer, if you want to change your field, you know, don't be afraid. You know, just go for it. What's the worst case scenario, right? You'll go back to India, and India is booming right now.
Yeah.
So, you know, you can wait it out in India, or maybe you'll find a better opportunity there. India, they're looking for people who have startup experience in the US,
uh-huh.
you know, who can bring the professionalism, who can bring, you know, that extra edge back there. So at this point, I wouldn't wait.
Good point. I've met some people who came from India from startups, and some of them were saying that the salaries in India are also competitive to Bay Area in rupees, right? So that is, I was surprised to hear that.
Oh, yeah, yeah. So like some recent moves, at least even at the high level, like a couple of execs moved back to Snapdeal and Quikr and all.
Yeah.
And from what I hear, the salaries are very, very competitive right now.
That's good.
So I think, yeah, if I would take the risk and, you know, move to some startup. There's another option, you know, like there, and, you know, you should obviously consult an attorney for this. But if you can pool in some money and get a startup going in the U.S., then there are some categories which you can apply and get visas.
Oh, yeah. So, yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Yeah.
We have had other guests who did that, right? So there is startup visas, investor visas, and things like that. Yeah,
that's a good payout.
Do you remember the day that you got your green card when you felt like free finally?
I do. And
what happened that day?
I remember also the next day. The next day is when I gave my notice to Synopsys, and I joined a startup. So for me, I was just waiting for it for so long.
How did you celebrate it? Did you have any Eureka moments that day?
I think we were actually traveling. Like my wife and I, we were traveling in. I think we were in Canada.
Okay.
And we were visiting her parents or something, and it was we went out for dinner, and it was really exhilarating and freeing, and you know you feel you definitely feel very restricted under an H-1 because you can't move companies easily. You always have the risk of like if the company is doing a downsizing or laying off people. You are at the highest risk because, you know, in 15 days, you have to either find another job or go back.
Leave the country, yeah.
Yeah, so that's pretty high risk.
So after giving your resignation, what did you do?
Well, I started working on the next startup. So.
Oh, you did? Okay, was it your own or was it someone else's?
So I was one of the initial members at a startup. It was in EDA. It was called Zoomsys.
Yes.
We were based out of Cupertino. California.
What is EDA again? I know you mentioned in the beginning. Can you repeat it?
EDA stands for Electronic Design Automation.
Okay. What is that? Can you, if you were to say a quick 1 minute preview of what it is?
Yeah. So EDA focuses on making software for chip design. So any company that does chip design uses software to make sure the chips will work before they make it.
It's like firmware.
It's some firmware, some hardware, and some software. So Synopsys and Cadence are the biggest players in EDA.
Okay.
And their customers are anyone from Intel to Apple to Broadcom to Qualcomm.
Understood.
Right. So we, one of my acquaintances who is an IIT Bombay graduate, then he went and did his PhD from Berkeley. He was starting a startup in that space. And so it was one of the first cloud companies before the word cloud was invented. It was one of the companies that we were trying to do is take very large designs and simulate them on multiple machines at the same time, and that would increase the throughput tremendously.
Mm-hmm.
So I was one of the initial members. I ran engineering and product there.
Mm-hmm.
And we raised two rounds of funding while I was there. And that's what I did after Synopsys.
I see. Yeah. How was that experience for you? Like, were there any bad moments in that journey of your working at Zoomsys?
So I think what's happened with electronic design automation, EDA, is it's become a pretty stable market now.
It's become a commodity almost.
It's become very commoditized. Synopsys and Cadence, they rule the roost in that particular sector.
Okay.
So for startups, it's very hard. So it's very difficult because you need a bunch of PhDs to do anything there. So the cost of operations is very high. And then the return is not, you're not sure about, how you're going to get the return. Okay. So
it's hard for a startup to be competitive in that market. Only a big company could.
Very hard, very hard. Okay. Yeah, very hard.
So is it still an existing company?
No, so we did pretty well. Initially, we got some big labels to sign up.
Yeah.
But then 2008 came and, we just got stuck in the doldrums that followed. So we had to wind it down, and it was not a super successful startup, I would say.
I see.
But it was a great learning experience, and it's one of the reasons I decided that EDA was not it for me anymore. So
Okay. So once you decided that EDA is not in it for you.
Mm-hmm.
It's not like you can immediately go into some other field and start working in that, right?
So
what was it like for the transition?
I took some time off. I actually took about a year off.
Oh, wow.
So I traveled. We went back to India. We traveled in Europe a little bit. And then I started...
Was it with your... do you have kids? Was it with your
kids? We don't have kids. Oh, so okay. It's just my wife and me. Yeah.
Oh,
so,
okay. That's okay.
Yeah. And we started also at the same time started getting into yoga and meditation and stuff. But besides that, I had to reinvent myself. So my whole technology stack, my product stack, even my Rolodex was focused on EDA. So, you know, like EDA is mostly C, C++ programmers, a chip design background.
Yeah.
And all the clients are Intel, Qualcomm, you know, Broadcom. So if you looked at my LinkedIn at the time, I was connected to like a bunch of people at Intel, bunch of people at Qualcomm,
okay,
bunch of people at Broadcom, right? So I had to like completely reinvent on what's next for me.
So how did you do it? Did you take courses? Did you start meeting people? Like, how would you reinvent yourself?
So I started going to a lot of meetups at the time,
okay,
just to see, get the pulse of the market. And consumer internet is something that really appealed to me, like in terms of making a product that millions of people will use very quickly, was very appealing to me, because EDA, you're making products that are used by other enterprises.
Uh-huh.
So at the max, you have 100 users, you know.
Yeah.
You're making a lot of money out of it, but the number of people using your product is very limited.
So it's also about the impact, you're saying, the people you touch and the people you impact?
That's exactly right. Like, okay. So I was thinking, you know, like, why are we doing EDA? Like, what is the effect? If for any company that started, right, like for the founders, it's kind of becomes imperative to think of why they're doing it, you know, and you peel the layers, right? Like you start off with, okay, you know, I want to do something on my own. And then, okay, so why else? Okay, you know, you want to be cool. Okay, why? So if you keep going through that, right,
uh-huh,
there has to be some basic thing that you're trying to change.
Yeah.
You know, you have to have some impact on people's lives. So that's when I decided, okay, you know, consumer internet is something that I'm very excited about. Mm-hmm. I was already into products. You know, I like, in general, like interacting with products and thinking, uh-huh, about, you know, why someone would put something. Like I used to, at that time, I used to drive a BMW. And now that I think about it, it was, you know, like more than 8-9 years ago. And some of the features that were there, and I had like a base level, you know, BMW. It was not any of the fancy models or anything. But even now, when I step into like a Honda, or if I step into a Toyota, I see that they have copied or gotten inspired by some features that that car had years ago.
Yeah.
So those are things that really like excite me. Like Tesla, for example, is really exciting for me.
Got it. So not copying it on from the old one, but actually creating it so that someone else will, so that it's useful for so many people, right?
Not only that, you know, like getting people, like people make products all the time, right? You know, you have so many companies like at the forefront of technology, like Samsung and Microsoft and Google and Apple, and there are a million other companies. Now, some of these companies make products that are really cool, but they just don't see like so much usage as other products. Mm-hmm. So it's very interesting to see like why that is.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I mean, in my opinion, like Xbox, like the Kinect, right,
uh-huh,
was an amazing thing, but it just doesn't get the same amount of press as,
yeah,
you know, even failed projects like Google Glass.
Oh, okay.
So anyway, I started doing a lot of meetups. Then I started coding myself, like websites, apps. Started learning the stack for internet.
Okay.
So when I was doing all this, I think Ruby on Rails was on the rise.
Okay.
So I picked up Ruby on Rails and the LAMP stack, which is Linux, Apache, MySQL, PHP, just to, you know, like, just so that I can mock up stuff without being dependent on someone else to do it.
Mm-hmm.
So
how did you support yourself in that time?
Yeah, well, I think there are various versions of that story, but it was not easy. I think it was tougher for my wife than myself.
Okay.
But she was very supportive all through the time.
So she was working, you mean?
No, so she's always worked part time.
Okay.
So she has her own small business that she runs. So,
I see. Okay.
Yeah. So
you had to struggle during that time?
It was. I mean, obviously, we had a little bit of saving because I had been working for a little while.
Uh-huh.
Right. So, but, you know, being the Bay Area, the mortgages are not small here.
Yeah.
So it was a struggle. It was we had to dig deep into savings.
OK.
Even a little bit into, you know, 401ks and stuff like that.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. But, you know, I figured, you know, it's worth it. You know, we live only once, so.
Okay. So can you So digging into 401k is some serious stuff, actually, right?
Actually, now, I wouldn't. I mean, I am definitely on the higher risk-taking side.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, what happened is back in 2007, if you had a 401k,
mm-hmm.
In 2008 and 2009, most of the 401ks lost half of their value anyway.
Okay.
So I sort of like lucked out in the sense I took out some of the money.
Oh, okay.
Because the stock market crashed in 2008.
Yeah.
So people lost so much money in their 401ks.
Uh-huh.
So in hindsight, I actually didn't lose out that much because, you know, I just took it out.
Got it. And so, paid taxes instead. So was there any ever a day where you said, like, what am I doing with my life? You know, I had a nice job, nice salary. And why am I doing this?
I was asking that question pretty much every day.
Ah.
Yeah. So, and you know, it kept me going a little bit. And, you know, it's a tough question, you know, especially when it comes from like close family, like, you know, my mom would always ask me this, that, you know, what are you doing? You know, you got all this education and stuff. It's a typical Indian mom question to ask.
Yeah, I was going to say that is the perk or the downside of being Indian, right? For your mom, you're always a kid.
Yeah, and you're like, you went to this IIT and all this stuff, and now you are like, but going around, you know, that's something.
Now you're struggling to pay your mortgage, really? What are you doing?
Yeah. That's exactly right. So it was very, very frustrating and struggling. We struggled a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
But I think especially for us, we were kind of lucky because we got into a bunch of yoga and meditation practices at that time.
Okay.
So it definitely gives you a different perspective about life.
Yeah.
When you sit for meditation for, you know, like 15, 20 minutes every day, you're meditating, it opens up a lot more thoughts and calms your nerves a lot.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it's very good for your nervous system, you know. So
is that something that you, kept with you as you moved on with your career, meditation practice and mindfulness?
Oh, yeah. So I meditate every day. I try to meditate twice, but at least once I meditate. And each time I sit for meditation, I meditate for 20 minutes.
I see. Okay. Yeah. So what is the your secret of your productivity? You have done so many things and you do so many things, right? So you're going to meetups. And even at that time, what keeps you like want to try all these things and do it efficiently?
I think... you know, just one is, you know, the passion to do something different, you know, like make a difference in the world. And second is the meditative practices that I'm doing.
Okay.
You know, they really help me like clear up my mind every day. So all of us go through so much stress every day, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's mental pressure, there's physical pressure. These practices like yoga and meditation, they're kind of like going to the car wash every day.
Yeah.
So they just help you like get out of that.
I agree.
And they've been very helpful. That has been very big factor in my life.
Yeah. I've been practicing meditation for the past 1 year as well.
Yeah.
And it's been transformative for me as well. More in terms of actually productivity. So I don't feel so overwhelmed about doing like 10 different things. When
mm-hmm.
I'm so mindful of what I'm doing at that moment, it doesn't feel stressful anymore.
Yeah, exactly. That's a great insight, Rohit. Yeah.
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 So, what did you do after that? So, after you got into like what was you finally ended up in Sawan, right? How did that happen?
Yeah, so I was actually traveling in India.
Uh-huh.
And I was talking to a bunch of good friends and mentors and a bunch of investors. And I just happened to run into one of my very good friend who at that time he was running the Ram Sriram, you know, the famous Googler has fund in India called Sherpalo. So Sandeep Murthy was running it. And so I was just talking to Sandeep, and he said, hey, you know, these guys at Savan are doing B2C. They used to be B2B before, and, you know, they're looking at B2C, and they're looking for someone to, you know, help with.
This is Sherpalo Ventures?
Yeah, it was. Yeah, it's okay. I think they've renamed it now.
Yeah, so. I still see the website at sherpalo.com.
Okay, okay. Okay,
and
okay.
Yeah, Ram, Sriram, everyone is in here. I think it's the same.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think Sandeep has moved on to something else, but.
Yeah, it's only Ram, Sriram right now.
Yeah.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So Sandeep has started his own small VC fund now. So.
Okay.
Yeah, so he put me in touch with these guys, and it just happened that I knew one of the founders, Param, personally through some other connections.
Okay.
So they just happened to be in Bombay. I was in Bombay. So we all met up. I think the vibe was very good right from the beginning.
Mm-hmm.
And so I joined. So I was actually supposed to be in Bombay, heading all partnerships and stuff like that.
Okay.
And that's how I got into Savan.
Yeah. So when I look at your like technical expertise at that time, right, it was probably not in line with what you did at Savan, but you're saying that the connection was stronger. Like, tell me more about that.
So, yeah. So, I mean, as I mentioned before, my stack was completely different. And, you know, even my Rolodex was completely unrelated to consumer internet, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think when I met these guys, I had already started the website for Yoga Tailor by then.
Mm-hmm.
So I mean, just as like a side story there, while I was doing this reinvention of myself, I started just creating small projects. So Yoga Tailor was one of that, because okay. I was traveling myself. I had a problem of finding the right yoga practice from, you know, finding a studio and stuff. So I looked at YouTube. I looked at a bunch of other apps at that time. There was nothing that really solved the problem. So I went ahead and created this website called yogatailor.com.
Okay.
And the whole idea was you go there and you say, I'm a beginner or I'm an expert. I have 45 minutes. I'm pregnant or I have back pain. It actually goes ahead and creates a customized video for you.
Mm-hmm.
So I put it out there.
So this was even before you went into Savan.
Yeah. The website was before. And I put it out there, and I didn't expect like it to do anything. You know, it was like just there for myself kind of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But within like weeks of it being on out there, it started getting picked up by a bunch of blogs and a bunch of, you know, like avid yoga people and stuff. They started writing about it. And then Shape Magazine called me and said, hey, you know, we would like to write about it. And so they wrote about it. And then there was a magazine called Parents Connect from Nickelodeon. And so they found out about it. So they wrote about it. So it was not something that I was doing like very consciously. It was just happening.
I see.
So it got a lot of traction. Then I said, okay, you know what? Maybe I should spend some time making it better. So I spent quite a bit of time after that, making it better, put the payment process and all that stuff. So when I met the Savan people, I had already done a bunch of things. So the website was getting, at that time, the website was getting about the same traffic as Savan.com was getting.
Oh, wow. So, actually, I look at your website from the Wayback Machine. There is an archive of the website in 2009. And it looks like fully functional. You have a blog up there. You have the home button, login. You have a fully functional website. Like, it's almost close to what you have now.
Yeah, in terms of the website, that's right. Yeah, okay. We didn't have an app and all that stuff at that time. But yeah, it was fully functional. By 2011, it was fully functional.
Yeah, there's a video from Betty Jones.
Yeah,
Vimeo.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So, so that was all. That's how, you know, when I met these guys, I already knew the stack.
Okay.
I already knew what building a consumer internet product means.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew how to get traction, how to get PR and all that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I got published on Shape just by myself. And Savan was a much bigger company. So we could do much bigger things.
Yeah.
And also the vibe between Vin and Param, who are the founders of Savan, and myself, I think we had very good vibe. We trusted each other quite a bit.
So actually, when I look back, you had a very good product going well, doing well for yourself. And
yeah.
Why would you consider not pursuing that and going to Saavn instead?
Saavn was growing much faster.
Okay.
So it also turned out that way, right? So
yeah.
And also this was very early stages in Saavn's B2C life also.
Mm-hmm.
So I saw the impact that we can have in terms of bringing music to millions of people.
Okay.
And they had also closed like some rounds of funding by then. So mm-hmm. So it was ideal for me in the sense it gave me experience in the Indian market. So I wanted experience in the Indian market.
Okay.
And consumer internet. So it was ideal in many ways. Like it was digital media. It was consumer internet. It was India.
And I had a good team to work with.
I had a good connection with these guys.
Got it.
So that's, I said, okay, you know, let me park Yoga Tailor for a little while.
Uh-huh.
And yoga is an evergreen business. So it's not like it's going to disappear. So I said, okay, let me spend some time on.
Were you not worried about getting competitors?
I was worried, but, you know, like yoga is such a evergreen business. So it was something that I was going to come back to.
Okay.
Yeah.
I see. Okay. So how was your time at Saavn like?
Oh, it was fantastic. Saavn is...
You worked mostly in Mumbai. I see on your LinkedIn page it was in... Oh, it says both Mountain View and Mumbai.
Yeah, well, so and New York actually. So Saavn is based out of New York.
Uh-huh.
The head HQ is in New York. And we have a product and engineering group in Mountain View.
Mm-hmm.
And Bombay is where a lot of the content operations are. You know, like when we get music, they get ingested in Bombay.
Okay.
But now the company is expanding a lot in Bombay in terms of building up more engineering there.
Okay.
I think there's even a product person there.
Mm-hmm.
So I used to travel at least once a month to New York.
What was your responsibility?
So I started off as leading partnerships. So I used to deal with companies like Facebook, Google, you know, Tata Docomo or Airtel and stuff like that.
Okay.
But slowly it morphed into, I was responsible for product and growth there. So product is, you know, like what does the product do? What does it look like? You know, which platforms do we go for? What are the integrations we do?
Uh-huh.
And growth is a cross-functional team at Saavn. So it has people from engineering, design, marketing, sales. And the responsibility for growth is to do growth hacking. So to get to, you know, the next big number that we had in mind at the time. So
like any startup, you had to go through multiple roles, right?
Yes. Yeah.
So what pushed you over the edge to quit Saavn and do your own yoga company again?
No, as I mentioned, you know, I always wanted to go back to Yoga Tailor. That's something that was back of my mind. And
do you remember the day that you gave your resignation, like after the green card for your earlier companies? Did you remember the day? Was there anything special?
Well, it was nothing. This was not that special because it was not like I was suffering at Saavn. I was actually having good time there.
Okay.
So it was not like as bad as, you know, like you know, my waiting out green card and stuff.
Okay.
Even though Synopsys is a fantastic company to work for.
Mm-hmm.
But I think for at Saavn, one thing is the company has grown really well.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was responsible for product and growth. And I think it delivered really well in growth. So while I was there, we hit about like 11 million plus monthly active users.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was quite happy with what has been achieved already. And I said, you know, there are people who can take it from there. You know, it's not like it was not like a unsolved problem growing from there.
Mm-hmm.
And Yoga Tailor was kind of floundering in some ways. And I also started looking at the various things that were happening in the market. So wearables were picking up, like Fitbit, Misfit, you know, all the Apple Watch.
Mm-hmm.
And then screen technology like Chromecast, Apple TV, these were coming into the market.
Mm-hmm.
Even Roku and all this, right? So it's actually the ideal time for like an app like Yoga Tailor to be in the market, because you can bring all these technologies and make something very cool. So I said, I can't waste any more time on this.
Okay. Can you give a quick pitch for Yoga Tailor? Like, what does it do? What is it?
Yeah. So Yoga Tailor essentially is it's a personal yoga and mindfulness trainer in your pocket. So it asks you a few questions after you download about your goals. So you can have some mind goals. You can have some body goals. So you can say, I want to sleep better. I want to focus more. I want to increase my flexibility. I have body pains, for example, right? Then it creates customized multi-day program for you. And then what it does is it actually keeps tab on how you're doing, if you are progressing or if you're regressing. And it adapts based on that.
Yeah.
So that's in a sense what it is.
So I like the tailoring the time portion of it. Uh-huh. And sometimes I have 30 minutes and sometimes I'm okay with hour and a half, right? And I've been using it for the past couple of weeks since we first met. And yeah, I've been able to tailor it a lot.
Oh, great. Yeah. That's one of the most used features of the app. And also, you know, it also tailors to different ability levels. So you could be a beginner or you could be a expert. So we get like a lot of emails from customers who feel that, you know, they don't feel pressured in, you know, doing something that they can't do right now, which they feel at a lot of yoga classes that they go to.
Okay.
So the big problem that we are solving is personalization, you know. So people go to yoga studios and they're one of 20, 30 people. And especially if you're new to yoga, you know, all the terms that are used and like a lot of the yoga studios put a lot of pressure and people end up hurting themselves. So we want to create like a safe and personalized experience. And we also want to introduce more and more people to the benefits of mindfulness and meditation.
I see.
So that's our current focus. Like we're recording a lot of meditations and stuff.
Okay. Yeah, we were talking about working with Nikki Mirgafori and recording the mindfulness sessions with her.
Right.
Okay, I'm looking forward to that. I'm waiting to see meditation show up as well.
Yeah.
So what has been the biggest struggle for you so far in terms of Yoga Tailor?
I think it's become a pretty common problem with most app developers is it's become a chicken and egg. Earlier, you used to have easier time getting installs. So you just create an app, which is reasonably well done, and you put it on the App Store, and boom, you get like 10,000 downloads, 100,000 downloads, right? Mm-hmm. Now, there are so many apps out there, right, that it's becoming harder for people to surface up in the App Store.
Okay.
And it's a bigger problem on the iOS App Store than the Android. I mean, Android has its own issues, but the like number of users on Android is much bigger. But on the iOS App Store, it's becoming harder for apps to get the initial traction.
Okay.
So that's one side. And the other side is when you go to investors and you say, hey, you know, I'm building an app. Now investors have figured out that to create an app is not very expensive. Like you can spend, I mean, if you know how to code, you don't have to spend any money. You're just obviously not taking a salary. Mm-hmm. But even if you have to spend money, like for $25,000, you can get a pretty good app made.
Yeah.
Right. So most investors are saying, hey, you know, come back and talk to me when you have, you know, like everyone has their own number, like 100,000 users or million users. Right.
Okay.
So it's becoming chicken and egg. You know, to get to that million users, you need money now. It is not.
Why do you need money to get a million users?
It's becoming harder and harder.
No, for advertising, you mean? How would you use a million?
Okay. Yeah. Like some kind of, you need to do a little bit of, you know, like that initial Facebook ads or Twitter ads or, you know, like go to events. For example, for Yoga Tailor, you know, we want to go to some yoga events and connect to the community.
Okay.
You know, all this takes money. Like, you know, even hiring someone to do content marketing. All of this takes money.
Okay. What is your? Okay. Sorry to interrupt.
No.
Plan for? You know, first is one thing is growing traffic and reaching a lot of people, and the next one is monetization, right? What is your plan for monetization?
Monetization is something that we already have in the app. So we use a freemium model. So it's a 15-day free trial.
Okay.
And then after 15 days, the users have to pay $2.99 per month.
Okay.
Or $30.99 for 6 months. So actually, the second option is much more popular, the $30.99 for 6 months.
Okay.
So right now, that's our monetization.
I see. Okay. I'm still in the 15-day period, I think. So that's why I was not aware of it.
Yeah. No. Yeah, just let me know. We'll get it extended somehow. So.
No, it's fine.
And then what we're looking at is once we get some critical mass,
mm-hmm.
like once we hit X number of users,
mm-hmm.
we're looking at a few other monetization angles. So because we have so much data about you in terms of, you know, your yoga practice and mm-hmm. how you meditate and stuff. And the fact of the matter is a lot of people, especially in the US, they do want to go to the studio once in a while to mm-hmm. do yoga, or they want a group setting.
Mm-hmm.
So we want to make that happen.
So
think of it as, you know, like you download the app, you're happy with doing it at home, but like say a couple of weekends you want to go to a studio.
That's what I do. Like I do at home 2 days a week. And on the weekends or on Fridays I go to a class outside.
Yeah, and we want to make that happen. Like
got it.
I don't know how much you pay, but typically drop-ins are pretty expensive.
Yeah, 15 bucks, I think.
Yeah, so we want to make it a little more reasonable than that.
I got it. Okay.
And also create that connection between you and the yoga studio
mm-hmm.
so they also have some insight on what you've been doing when you're not at the studio.
Yeah.
Right. So it gives them a better picture of, hey, okay, you are progressing. So maybe they can suggest some higher level classes for you and stuff.
I see.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I'm looking forward to it. I'm looking forward to the, you know, growth of Yoga Tailor, and I wish you good luck with that.
Yeah. So I was telling someone the other day that, you know, last time I counted, there are 18 channels for Traxion. And I think I'm familiar with most of them, you know, given my experience at Savan and other companies. And so we are trying many of them, but not all of them at the same time, obviously. So for
18 channels to engage with your potential users.
18, yeah, 18, yeah.
Oh, wow. Okay, that's a lot.
Yeah.
What is one of the least, like, unlikely ones or most overlooked ones?
Most overlooked, sure, yeah. Most overlooked ones that a lot of startups don't do is, I would say, like, talk at tech conferences, talk at conferences.
Okay.
You know, get out there and, for example, like a yoga conference or something.
Mm-hmm.
So, get yourself invited and be on a panel or, you know, even, you know, take some beer and show up at these conferences.
Okay.
I think that's one of the least explored ones. People, everyone does like SEO, app store optimization, press releases, and all this everyone does.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, there are some that I think people leave, like even like radio advertising, a lot of people don't do it anymore, but I think it's still pretty relevant.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
So before we wrap up, Ramesh, actually, is there anything else that you would like to mention?
I think this is pretty comprehensive. If you get a chance, you know, go ahead, please try Yoga Tailor.
Yeah.
And let me know. My email is ramesh@yogatailor.com.
Perfect. So that was my next question. Where can people reach you? But you already answered that. And any recommendations that you have, you know, you've been in the startup world for so long and you have learned so much. And any resources that you can mention that helped you along the way?
Resources, you know, like now with so much on the internet, I would definitely, you know, pour through YC documentation, right? Like Y Combinator, they have really made it a science, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then YC along with Stanford, they came up with this class called startupclass.co.
Mm-hmm.
And if you are planning to do a startup, I would just go there, and it was a live class that they recorded, and mm-hmm. now everything is archived, everything is there, and it's free. So I wouldn't waste any time going there, and like just get there, do everything there.
Online. So, okay, got
yeah,
it.
Yeah, it's called Startup Class. They had speakers from you know, Mark Zuckerberg to you know, Sam Altman, who runs YC.
Mm-hmm.
They had Paul Graham talk there. They had Reid Hoffman. So, like, anyone you can think about who has influence on startups right now,
okay,
they had on the class.
Startupclass.co. I will link to I will link it in the show notes for everyone listening to refer to later. And I'll also have your contact information, ramesh@yogataylor.com.
Sure, yeah.
Thank you. Thank you so much for doing this, Ramesh.
Yeah.
And I wish you very good luck with Yoga Taylor. And hopefully we get to chat here again when your company is more successful in the future as well.
Yeah. I would love to come back. And I wish all of your listeners best of luck. And as immigrants, obviously, we have some challenges that we have to overcome in terms of, you know, green cards and stuff like that. But I think it's a great time for people like us to get things done. And the U.S. especially has been pretty amazing experience. You know, we have people like Sundar Pichai now heading Google, and we have Satya now heading Microsoft. And it's just a culture that allows immigrants to rise up, which is pretty amazing. So
well said. I couldn't agree with you more.
Thank you. Thanks, Rohit.
All the show notes with the links mentioned are available at breakingthebottles.com/Ramesh, RAMESH. Thank you for tuning in. To get updates on latest episodes, make sure you subscribe with your email by going over to breakingthebottles.com. If you know anyone good as a guest, shoot me an email. I will reach out to the guest, get hold of them, and ask them all the questions that you have. My email is rohit@breakingthebottles.com. Thanks again, and have an amazing day.